Thank you, David, and thank you to the Foundation for Science Technology for this opportunity to engage with everyone, not just on the Mission Zero report, which I'll talk about in a moment, but the wider question around achieving net zero. And I think it's particularly pertinent given the publication of the final census report by the IPCC yesterday. I often say net zero is not just about 2050. Having been the minister responsible back in 2019 for signing the UK's commitment to achieve net zero emissions into law, we became the first G7 country to do so. I think we beat France by one day. There's a tendency sometimes to think of net zero as a sort of 28-year sort of project. But for myself personally, and then looking also at the recommendations in the net zero review, when we come to look at the politics and the implementation of net zero, the decisions that we need to make in this decade, in this year, will decide whether we meet our national determined contribution, our NDC, that was set at the Glasgow Climate Pact. And if you'd asked me back in 2019 that 90% of the world's GDP would now be under a form of net zero target, I simply wouldn't have believed you. We've made enormous progress, both as the UK domestically, but also internationally, demonstrating climate leadership. But many of these countries, you know, if they're going to achieve net zero, whether that's in 2050 or 2060 or 2070, when it comes to China, if they are unable to meet their targets that they have set for 2030, then effectively the project begins to unwind. And you know, net zero was not just net zero in isolation, it was net zero in order to maintain a commitment looking at how we could limit ourselves to 1.5 degrees global warming temperatures, something that the IPCC yesterday has recognized is vanishingly small in terms of its our ability to be able to achieve that. And we have up until the middle of the next decade at best if we're going to be able to maintain 1.5 degrees. So the actual policy debate around on net zero is real and present. And the danger is not obviously not just achieving our climate ambitions, also for the UK demonstrating our future leadership is also absolutely vital. The UK has one of the most ambitious national determined contributions, 68% emissions reductions on 1990 levels by 2030, 78% emissions reduction levels by 2035. So a lot of the work towards net zero is being front loaded, will need to be achieved in the next 5 years to a decade. And that's why when it came to looking at the net zero review, I was keen to make the argument that the UK is potentially not only falling behind in a new net zero race. The Inflation Reduction Act was signed while we were taking through the consultation exercise of the review, but that's created an entirely new paradigm, a paradigm I was keen to lean into in the review, a new narrative around net zero. So that even if there wasn't a climate crisis, which there clearly is, don't misquote me on this, we should be doing net zero anyway for the opportunities it provides the future of the UK economy. There is no future economy without recognition that that is also a green economy. And you know, politicians like Joe Biden, stateside, has recognised that and lent into the narrative of actually every second job will be a green job. And in fact, there's no such thing as a green job. Actually, many of these jobs are now mainstream. They are engineering jobs, they are science jobs, they are retrofitting jobs, they are mainstream jobs that anyone can aspire to. And we've got a huge opportunity to recognize where net zero can provide economic advantage to the UK as well. So that was a key part of the review. I was asked in my terms of reference from the previous Prime Minister, Liz Truss, to look at how we can achieve net zero in a more affordable and efficient manner, one that's pro-business and pro-growth. And I sort of brought it on myself, to be honest with you, because I sort of put all the Conservative leadership's candidates' feet to the fire and made them all sign up to a net zero pledge to make sure that the net zero target didn't hit the cutting room floor as a result of the leadership race. Only the current Home Secretary and the current Business and Trade Secretary didn't actually sign the pledge. But I understand certainly the Business and Trade Secretary is very pro-net zero and recognises the opportunities for net zero to be part of future trade deals. But that aside, when it comes to looking at how to achieve net zero, just not only by 2050, as I said, by 2030, a lot riding on our NDC, but also a number of mandates we set out, the electric vehicle mandate of removing petrol and diesel cars from the road, you know, mandates around sustainable aviation fuel, around no new gas boilers. You know, all of this is coming down the tracks quite soon. And if we overpromise and underdeliver on these initial targets set for 2030 and beyond, who in the public is going to necessarily trust us as politicians to be able to deliver in the future? So I think there's a lot riding on the credibility of the UK's net zero pathway in the next couple of years. And so when we came to look at the report and its conclusions, obviously, we decided to take a mission-based approach. Actually, I think David can take some responsibility for that. I think it was him who set me up with the Moyes Commission and Mariana Mazzucato when I was science minister to come and give a speech at UCL on looking at how to implement mission-based approaches. And I never forgot that yellow document that David gave to me on the back of that sort of that launch. And I stayed in contact with Mariana, and I wanted to look at how we could take a mission-based approach to net zero, not just for the sake of, you know, missions being sort of relatable to those grand challenges, and net zero being one of those difficult challenges that we need to recognize as being absolutely vital, but rather the mission-based approach would allow us to recognize the long-term policy certainty that was needed to, in order to produce a transition that is more affordable and more efficient. The answer to my essay question I was set by Liz Truss is effectively, if you want to do net zero in a more affordable, efficient way, if we want to de-risk the cost of capital, de-risk the cost of investment, bring down the learning cost of technology, bring down the labor costs of the supply chains, we will make the upfront investment sooner rather than later, because to delay only adds to the cost of delivering on net zero. And also recognizing the impact of not zero is not just around the loss of economic benefit from not actually being a leader in future climate sort of technologies, whether that's hydrogen, CCUS, new nuclear. It's also about recognizing the impact of climate risk and actually failing to take action on mitigation. Also, it impacts on adaptation for the future, and huge costs to the UK if we don't recognize the need to get onto the net zero transition. So we set out a paradigm, which was the certainty, clarity, consistency, and continuity, the four C's that would define our missions. And I took forward 10 10-year missions that would begin from 2025 to 2035, recognizing 2025 is not just a number I plucked out of the air, it was a midway point towards 2050. It's 5 years then away from the NDC for 2030. But critically, when it comes to those 10 missions, you know, and we recognize that we should continue with our work on where we've been very successful, like offshore wind, but recognizing the number one mission should be around grid and infrastructure, looking at ensuring that when it came to net zero, it's not just the responsibility of central government to deliver on net zero. 50% of all net zero decisions will need to be made outside of government. We need a whole of society approach to net zero that requires a whole of society-based approach to policymaking, understanding that it will be local communities, local authorities, regional authorities that need greater powers and responsibilities to be able to deliver on the net zero policies that they recognize in their local area can have the greatest impact as fast as possible. And when it comes to delivering on net zero by 2050, that's the overall national target. It was always the case that Scotland was set 2045, Wales was going to be 2055, and Northern Ireland would be 2055. But then Manchester wants 2038. Bristol, Oxford, Cambridge, some of those cities that are powering ahead. Actually, when we look internationally at what's happening, most countries are off track on delivering their national determined contributions. But when we look at the 40 global cities, actually, the majority of those are on track for maintaining their net zero commitments by 2050. So we should empower those who are able to go further, faster, and at the same time as working closely with those who need the additional support and investment, those hard to abate areas, countryside areas with agricultural impacts, industrial areas with obviously high cost of carbon industries that are historic that need that additional support. So the mission-based approach that we took in the review, taking a 10-year mission approach for a number of sectors, you know, wind, onshore wind, solar to create a rooftop revolution. I was keen that we leaned into solar. It's on the front page of the Mission Zero report because I fundamentally believe that we can achieve a 70 gigawatt target by 2035 if we also engineer a new approach to energy, which recognizes net zero is not about continuing with the same pathways we've had around supply. It is around understanding how we can utilize demand in a better way, how we can ensure that energy is not just a product, but a service, and that we empower individuals to be able to go on their net zero journey. And I've met with plenty of people, you know, put solar panels on their roofs, they've got the EV, they either use the EV with the battery as storage, at certain times of the day, or they've got a battery in their house, the holy trinity of energy supply for households. And they never look back. You know, what we've seen with the rising costs of energy as a result of the cost of gas crisis that obviously has meant that net zero has become far more than just an environmental project. It is also now about energy security. Actually, these individuals recognize their own part in the transition. We should lean into that for the future. So there's certainly the behavioral changes that are needed when it comes to understanding net zero. And when it came to behavioral change, recognizing that importance was key for the review. I would say that there is a delicate political tightrope to walk also when it comes to the transition. All of our policies are in transition as well. Many of the policy frameworks we have at the moment are not fit for purpose for dealing with the issues around delivering net zero over the next 2.5 decades. So the planning system, for example, will need to be changed. It is not at the moment net zero or climate compliant. We can only see that from the introduction of this new coal mine in Cumbria that seems to have passed through the planning inspector, bizarrely undermining international UK climate leadership. If that we'd had a climate compliant test in our planning system, it wouldn't have happened. But that aside, also recognizing other policy frameworks, regulatory frameworks such as the Energy Performance Certificate, not fit for purpose for delivering on carbon dioxide emissions reductions. Understanding that demand is absolutely vital for addressing net zero is something that I think the government's only recently stumbled across, because obviously the Treasury are now on the hook for people's energy bills through taking forward the sort of energy savings scheme. And so we need to recognize that we need to create new frameworks as we go on our journey, but we also need to rely on our existing policy frameworks in order to maintain the accountability mechanisms, the data that we have. But we don't have enough data. If we're going to have transparency, if we're going to have accountability, if we're going to be able to deliver on net zero, we've got to also not just say, well, tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow, we're going to meet that target in 2050. Yeah, we've seen BP resile themselves from their immediate 2030 net zero commitments. And that simply is unacceptable. You cannot simply claim you'll achieve net zero in 2050 if you're not making progress towards reducing over half of your emissions by 2030. That is the reality that's been set out by the UN, by the IEA, by Catherine McKenna's recent Integrity Matters report. And that messaging really does need to come from the top, from government, down through corporates, into wider society. But the overall politics of the Mission Zero report, as I said, long-term mission-based programmatic approach, moving away from a project-by-project approach that is endemic of this government's approach so far to tackling climate change. If we look at Germany with their KfW program, that's a 10-year program for delivering on energy efficiency, in contrast to schemes that we have, this sort of concertinaed approach, a stop-start nature, that just ends up costing more in the longer term. And now with the Inflation Reduction Act, yes, it's $369 billion worth of investment into green technologies. And that's great. And we should lean into that as the UK and not cry wolf, claiming that it's going to be taken to court, to the World Trade Organization. It'll be 10 years before that happens and the money will already be spent. Let's work out how we can create a new special relationship with our American partners on how we can work together to design out some of the really effective solutions to the net zero challenge that is not just a UK one, it's also a global one. And the economic success for the UK will come in designing out global solutions, not just UK-based solutions for UK-based problems. But the more immediate situation, the government will be responding to the net zero review next week. I don't think I'm betraying any confidences in saying it's likely to be the 30th of March, the last sitting day of Parliament. When the net zero review was taking place, we see the government decided not to challenge the High Court judgment that was brought against them by Client Earth that declared their net zero strategy illegal. I mean, that's one of the great things about having a net zero commitment in law, is that you are held accountable for it. And not all countries have that. We should recognize that we have this stable regulatory framework that is actually challenging the government to go further, faster. But the net zero strategy, having been found deficient, nothing to do with me, by the way. I left government in February 2020. So I've almost come back to mark the government's own homework to make the recommendations for how then they can implement a more effective, detailed strategy that is fit for purpose. We will see what the government's response is on the 30th of March. And that will be the moment whether we see whether the UK continues to wish to lead on net zero for the future, or whether it's going to cede that leadership to the United States or to Europe with the European Green Deal and their Fit for 55 programme. It's quite a nervous moment. But equally, the Mission Zero Review has been written in a way that tries to help the government. I've created a 25 by 2025 framework of immediate actions the government can take forward, knowing that there's probably about less than 300 legislative days left until the next general election. But then the mission-based approach from 25 onwards, having recognised that we need to get the basics right, the under the bonnet infrastructure, grid capacity, capability, storage issues, all sorted, if we're going to get rid of the delays and the pipeline blockages that are endemic in our current system, if we can get that right and begin a pathway towards delivering on our missions, then we will hopefully also unlock a consensus among parties that's been there on net zero, that was there when the Climate Change Act was signed into law back in 2008, when the Conservative Party backed the Labour Party to go further, 80% emissions reduction target. All mainstream political parties backed net zero in 2019, when we went to 100% emissions reductions on 1990 levels. We now need a consensus into the next general election that we can take forward some of the recommendations in the Mission Zero Review. Net zero is too important to play party politics with, and actually the next general election will be the most important when it comes to tackling climate change in the UK, because it will be under the stewardship of that administration, whoever that is, from October 2024, who will be responsible for delivering on the NDC by 2030. They will be responsible for either meeting our ZEV mandate on electric vehicles, or they will fail to meet it. They will be responsible for meeting our heat pump target of 600,000 installations by 2028, or they will fail to meet it. So the accountability on whoever forms the next government is absolutely critical for delivering on net zero. As I said, this is not just about 2050. Meeting our net zero emissions reduction target is all about 2030. And that's why we need to continue to hold whoever forms the next government in 2024 accountable for that. Thank you.